We're going to start on Kuf Ayin Hey, about 12 lines down. So here we've been discussing cases of Shchemera. What's interesting about today's daf is that, and this is interesting in Gemara in general, is that if you were to organize the Gemara, which clearly wasn't done in any logical order, I mean, there's association and there is some sort of logic to the Mishnayot, but there are certain basic tenets that the Gemara assumes you know all the way along. Well, all those tenets that you know are found in today's daf. Like, you would have wanted to know this daf before you started, like, Ksubos, before you started Gittin, before you started any of the Bablas. So today we get to the principles that we've taken for granted all along. Right, that's true. But so today we get to some of the principles that we take for granted, or we assume the knowledge of when we are doing the other dapping. So it says, Amar Rabba Shchemira, Shamar Manele Ploni Biyadiv. So there it says, I'm holding on to 100 zuz that belongs to this individual. Vamru Yitomim Parano. And the Tomim say, we paid it, Ne'manim. Then they are Ne'aman. Tznu Manele Ploni. If he says, give 100 zuz to so-and-so, and they said we paid it off. They're not believed. It says, how could you suggest such a thing? It makes the logic is backwards. Why? Because we said before that when he says tnu, then we listen to him and we do what he says. When he says mane, we say shema mishata. Maybe he's making, he's not really serious about it. He's just trying to make it look like he's not wealthy. When he says mane the ploni. So the fact that the tomim come and say we paid it, it only makes sense that they say they paid it when we think there's a true obligation. When they say tnu, and then they discharge the obligation, that makes sense. But if he says mane the ploni, we're not even sure there really is an obligation for them to come along and say we paid it, doesn't make so much sense. So, Mar says, was it? Ibcha mistabra, amar tnu mane. So when he says, give the money, came into paskabu on the milto, since he's definitive, and he says that I owe the money, iklameima de pare, then we could say they paid it off. Mane le ploni biyadi, which says 100 zuz in my hands, came into lo paskavu in the milta. He's not definitive. We don't really know if he owns the money. Iklamemar de lo pare. Then we could say that he didn't pay it off. Eleitmar ochitmar. If you want to phrase it, if you want to put it in the right framework, shchemira, shamar mane le ploni biyadi, shchemira that makes the statement which is not definitive, that simply says that I have 100 zuz in my hands. Ve'amru yutumnim chazar ve'amar lanu. He, again, afterwards said to Leno, Abba Parati Ne'amanim. They said our father then afterwards retracted and said that I already paid it off, or not even retracted. He just said, yes, I hundred to this person, I paid it, Ne'amanim. Over there in that case, they're Ne'aman. My time, Adkure Mitkar. He's remembering what transpired. Tnuma Ne'leploni, if he says, give 100 zuz to Amru Yitomim, Chazar V'amar Abba Parati, then their father came back and said, Parati, I paid it off. In that case, they were not believed. Demita de pare lo v'amar tnu. Because had he paid it off, he would never have used the lashon tnu. So in a case where the lashon is without tnu, that shows some sort of safek in their father's head. And the fact that he has a safek about whether he owes the money or not, he doesn't use lashon tnu. He doesn't command them yet to give the money. And therefore, when they come back and say, he says, parati, that I already paid it, it makes sense that he remembered. You know, he was thinking about this, and then he remembered all of a sudden, yeah, you know what? I did owe him money, but I paid it. But when you say it's new, when he commands them already to give it, then you can't say, oh, afterwards he remembered that he paid them, then why say give? If he had any safek, he would have just said, mane leploni, or would have not said anything. The fact that he says, new, and give it, is already a definitive statement, and therefore they lose some nemanut with regards to parati. Tosfot over here explains that when we say parati, what does it mean, parati? I paid it already. Now, the Yitomim are believed, in all these cases, he points out in general, if someone is loaned money by Edim, and they come along and they say, listen, you owe me money, you know, with Edim, and he says, yes, I did. Next day they come to court, and he goes, where's the money? He says, parati, I paid you already. He's Ne'aman. The person's Ne'aman to say that parati, that I paid it. When it comes to even a mil value day Edim, he doesn't require to repay it with Edim, and he's believed to say parati. Even when he admits that the loan was outstanding, he still has a right to say parati, I paid it back. So now that's true, number one here, by a Shchemira, for sure can say, you know, I owed money, and then parati, he could say. That's number one. Number two is the Tomim themselves can say paranu, that we paid it. They have a right to say such a thing. Just like their father could have made such a claim, they can make the claim parano. Yes, we know that he was all out on the money, but we paid it already. There should be no difference over here. They should be able to say parano. So Tosos wants to know what the case is over here. What's the chiddush over here? So he wants to suggest that the individual, what the chiddush here, is that the father has a right from amigo to say parati. I mean that not only, he's not saying now, when he speaks, he's not saying, I owe the money, and now I paid it. No, he's saying, I owe the money, and I already paid the money. I mean, not that he said after he admitted that he owed the money, that he said, I paid it after I admitted I owed the money. He says, oh, give him, I have a money of so-and-so in my hands. And then afterwards he says, I paid that. Meaning paid it after the fact? No. Doesn't says that you could say any time. What he's saying now is that I already paid it a long time ago.
Well, he says, I owe, but I owed.
Right, right. Well, that's how we're interpreting in the end. That midgard didgard, that he remembers that it was that he had owed it and then he already paid it back. So now, in that formulation, the Migo is like this. He could have said parati now, and he would be believed. So we believe him, Migo, that he could say that now. We believe him that in the past, he already had paid it back. He already paid it off. So that's why Tosus reads the Nemanut here. The problem for Tosus is then, what is the second half? Why aren't the Yitomim believed over here? The Yitomim who come along and say, right, Amar Abba Parati, my father paid, whether he said Snu Mane Leploni, or whether he said Mane Leploni, they should be believed because of Migo, they could say Parano, that we paid it off. If we could pay it off now and be believed, we should believe that our father said the parati. So Tosus says Eino Chanami. Tosus says that it works in both cases. They're Ne'aman in both cases. Ah, it says Ein Ne'amanim. So how does Tosus explain Ein Ne'amanim over here? So great, he says Ein Ne'amanim means that they're not believed as much as the other case. I mean, they're not Ein Ne'amanim, that they're not believed at all, right? But they are believed less than they would have had it been the case of the case where he says Tumah Ne'amanim. So he says, "V'hadamar inemanim came into lo paskal the milte. I know that fame is stabber lomar sham inemanim mitnu maneleploni." Makes more sense to say inemanim, but not necessarily that's a definitive halacha. It just makes more sense. You want to consider that possibility, or maybe challenge them a little more in that situation because it's less plausible or less believable what they're saying. So that's the way Tosus reads it to avoid the problem. But otherwise, they should be neman without any of this. Because of all the Migos that are here, that they could have said Parati or Parano, and they're believed in these instances. Alright, now the next case, Boi Rovo, and this is where here comes the fundamentals that we've been missing along the way along. Shchimira Shahude Mahu. Shchimira is on his deathbed, and then he admits to owing money. So now, Tzarech Lamar, so if I was to forget about a Shchimira, if this is a Bari, Bari comes along and says that I owe you money. So then the next day he goes to court and he says, listen, you owe me money. So the defendant here can say, listen, I was just joking with you when I said I owe you money. There was no obligation by me saying I owed you money. I just was having fun with you. So I said, I owe you money? Mishatib ani b'cha? So he dismissed the case. There's nothing to talk about. The only way that it works, or this person is believed, he says that he has to say, atemei dai. Says that here there are witnesses and he's going to say in front of witnesses. And the other person has to say, k'tovu, write it down. Those are the commands that a bari, a healthy person, if he wants it to have tokif, and to be able to bring it to court, the admission, he needs those, these are the basic, framework that has to be done in within to be chayav. Means that,
will you connect it to the term of that bari?
I'm sorry?
Will you connect it to
Hodat
Baldin?
Well, he's not a
Hodat Baldin is only when someone comes.
Hodat Baldin is only, that's the whole idea of Meshateh Ani Bechash. Meshateh Ani Bechash is when I'm not in the frame, I'm not in the context of Beis Din, then I'm not thinking I'm testifying. I can create those situations, I can create the context of Beis Din by having a dim, by writing and saying, write it down. So those create the same context of Beis Din, then Hodat Baldin becomes, right, relevant. But that's by a Bari. So Rava's question is by Shchimira, do we demand those items? So that's what Bari Rava, Shchimira Shodeh Mahu. He admits that he owes money. So Rech Lamar Atemei Dai. So he has to say, these are my witnesses, you know what I mean? You be my witnesses. The fact that I'm admitting it. Or in Tzarech Lomar, he doesn't have to say it. Atemei Dai. Tzarech Lomar K'tovu. Does he have to say them, write this down, you know, document this? Or in Tzarech Lomar K'tovu. Does he not have that requirement? So, does he, Adam Mishateh B'Shat Mita? Do people joke around on their deathbed? The whole premise of why by a healthy person, it works and he can say, I don't owe you the money is because he can say, I'm joking. Do people joke on their deathbed? I mean, does he have such a claim? So now the answer to these questions, after he asked the questions, Hadar Pashto, then he answered them. Ein adam mishateh b'shat mita. Here's the overarching principle. A person doesn't joke around on his deathbed. And the whole idea of, matnat shchimira is this idea that it's metarif dato, right, that he's in a precarious state and he's thinking, you know, let me get all these issues out of the way before I pass away. He's not thinking, let me see how many jokes I can play on this guy and say I owe money. Right, it's just not the right framework. It's not the right time. So we assume that he's not joking. It's bad timing. So he's not, we assume that he's not joking around. Once we assume that, then we say, Divrei Shchimira, Kechtuvim, Chemisurim Dami. They're as if written and given over. So now, Tosos points over here, we've had this before, Divrei Shchemira Ketuvim Musarim Dami, but it does, it's not the equivalent of what we've seen earlier on in Perek Mishnah Beit and other places, which means that Ketuvim Musarim there is that they don't need a kinyan. Right? Ketuvim Musarim Dami means that you don't need a functional kinyan by a Shchemira. Shchemira is a mirah, is enough. His amira translates into Ketuvim Musarim Dami, and therefore you don't need a kinyan. That's not what the Gemara is saying over here. The Gemara is using this terminology and uses it other places to mean that we do not demand of him all the trappings of a healthy person. A healthy person would require etemei dai, chtovu, right? And then they could have the excuse of ani b'shateh b'cha, b'shateh ani b'cha. All of those don't apply over here, because matnat shkimira ketuvim misurim dami. It's a code, it's a phrase that matnat shkimira ketuvim misurim dami means that a shkimira, we waive certain requirements that we'd have by a bari, we waive them by a shkimira. And that's what we're doing over here also. We're waiving the need to say atem I die. We're waiving the right or the need to say ktovu. And we're also saying that he loses the ability to say mishateh ani b'cha because it's the wrong time to say, to be joking around. And we assume that he's not joking around. So that's what the phrase means over here. So that's the first principle of shchemira, right? That, again, a basic principle of shchemira, that a shchemira is the demands that we place in a shchemira are much lower. The threshold is much lower for creating situations where we believe him or what his statements become. Have tokef, they have full-fledged, they are, we believe him, or we exercise whatever he says, or do whatever he has instructed us, because they are given tokef, like as if there was a kinyan there, as if there was, right, instructions that were given that should have been given in order to make it into a full-fledged admission. Alright, now the next Mishnah. So this is the Mishnah, that was a little piece of what we should have known before, now comes this Mishnah. Hamavet chaviro b'shtar gove menechasim mishubadim. Here you go, basic thing. You lend with the shtar, you're entitled to go after, right, encumbered property. Right? Very basic. Ayedei edim. If you lend with edim, govim menechasim b'nei chorim, then you're only allowed to go to free and clear property. You're not allowed to go after encumbered property. Hotzi alav kitav yodo. Again, he pulls out a shtar that has his handwriting on it, meaning the lovez handwriting on it, the debtor's handwriting, with his signature on it says that I owe you. Chayav lo, then he has to pay it. The IOU is right, he has to pay him. But he's govim and yichasim b'nei chorin. That only entitles him to go after free and clear property. Arev, hayotzei la'achar chitum, a guarantor that is after the signing of the document, meaning that you have a loan document that's laid out, Malven Lover signed in it, IOU, signed by the Edim. Below the Edim, there's an Arev signed along there. So there, Shtarot, thank you, after the signature on the Shtar, Govem Nechasim B'nei Chorin. He's only allowed to go after unencumbered or free and clear property. Maseh, Uval Lifnei Rabbi Shmuel. And came, the case came from Yisrael, v'amar goveh nechasim b'nei chorin. So he passed on like this. Amar lo ben nanas, eino goveh lo b'nechasim mishubadim, v'lo b'nechasim b'nei chorin. You can't go after either. You don't go after the mishubadim, or nor the b'nei chorin of the Arev. Why? Amar lo, lama, he says, why? Why not? I mean that the Arev signed on here, why can't you go after the Arev for out of his property? Amar lo, arei, achoneket echad bashuk. Someone is choking somebody in the shuk. When his friend comes along and says, Ramalo, Hanachlo, you know, leave him alone. And I'll pay you. Patur. He doesn't have to pay. Now it sounds from the case. The case is not simply that he's choking him and he's trying to free the joke, but rather he owes him money. Right? And he's coming over there and he's trying to extract the money from the individual. So along comes his friend and says, listen, let go of him. I'll guarantee that he'll pay. I'll make sure that he pays or I'll pay it. Over there he's patur. Why? Shalo al emunato hilvau. When it came to the loan, when the malveh gave the loan, was the arev present? The answer is no. So he lent the money without relying on the arev. So if he lent the money without relying on the arev, when the arev comes now, right, he doesn't change the fact that the loan was extended and the risk was taken. The loan extended and risk was taken without an arev there. So the fact that he did it already means that he lost his money already. When the arev comes along and says, leave him and I'll pay you, I'll be a guarantor now. Being a guarantor now is meaningless. Because the guarantee was only meaningful when you gave away the money, when you took on the risk. To have the guarantor come along now after the money's already been distributed, that doesn't make him an arev. That's not an arev. So that's what Banana says. When the guy's choking him in the shuk and he says, let go of him, I'll pay for it. He didn't rely on this individual to lend the money out. Although it sounds like he's relying on him not to choke this guy. But nevertheless, he's not chayav. He has not obligated himself as an arev. to pay up the money now. Ela, ezu arev, what's a real arev? Who's a guarantor? Shu chayav, halvehu, v'ani noten lecha, chayav. Lend him, and I will pay for it, right, or I'll take him. Shkein al emunato, right, halvehu. He lent him based on the trust. I mean, that he relied on this individual to lend him. He was, I mean, that's the whole point of the arev at the time of the loan is that I only lent the money because you were here. If you weren't here, I wouldn't lend the money. Because of that, that's what creates the obligation of the arev. Rabbi Shmuel, Harotze Sheyachkim Yasok B'dinei Mimonut. One who becomes wise, one who wants to really get to the depth of understanding, should be involved in Choshe Mishpat and Dinei Mimonos, right? In monetary matters. She'en lecha miktsoa b'torah yoter mehen. There's no greater, you know, part of the subject in the Torah, right? Profession, I wouldn't call profession, but profession in the Torah, like Dinei Mimonot. That's Choshe Mishpat, Yodin Yodin. Right, vein kimayan hanoveah. They're like a spring that bursts forth, because exactly what it is, it's case law. It's all about having principles in place, and then all the cases come up, trying to be medameh, one case to another, trying to extend the locha to cover these cases. If you want to have a good Rebbe in Dinei Mamonos, you should be, right, you should go to Shimon ben Nanas. Because he, obviously here, he explained to Rabbi Shmuel something, a principle in Arevut, that Rabbi Shmuel was not aware of, it wasn't clear to him.
Alright, so in case here I was looking for the correlation between Daf Yomi and the Parashat HaShavua.
Right, oh, very good, right, so Parashat Mishpatim. So here we go, this is the Dinei Mamonos, and here are all the basic principles of Shtar, Edut, Milva Alpeh, which we're going to get to in the Gemara in a second. All of these basic principles that, again, the Gemara has taken for granted all the way through, they're laid out here. Amar Ula. Dvar Torah, echad milve b'shtar, v'echad milve al peh, goveh minichasim shemeshubadim. Doesn't matter if the loan is done in a contract, doesn't matter if it was done orally, the loan entitles the malveh to a shibud on the loveh. That the malveh is entitled to a lien on all the property of the loveh, and he can come and take it, no matter what. Where do you get the fact that it's meshubad, shibud is midor, right? So where do you get that from the Torah? So Rashbam quotes the pasuk by Mashkon, which it says, "By Mashkon yotzi alecha avot," that he'll bring out to you the Mashkon. V'hu adin le'makarke. He says, "Oh, that's the same thing as a karka," and that the malveh has a right to come and demand collateral, or come and demand what was any of the possessions of the loveh to ensure that he gets his money back. That's where the Rashbam learns it. The Rabbeinu Gershom quotes a pasuk. He says, "Me'daraisa hu dichtiv eved loveh le'ish malveh," which of course is not found in the Torah, but he quotes that as the source for the fact that a shibud is mida oraisa. So he says, okay, so why is it encumbered? Why is there a lien, whether it's oral or done through a shtar? Because shibudu de oraisa, shibud is mina Torah. Velamata mamru milveh opeh enu guveh lemnichasim b'nei chorim. So how come then an oral loan is not entitled to go after the encumbered property? Shom pseda lukuchot. It's a protection, it's a commercial law that the Chachamim instituted to protect the buyers. How are buyers supposed to know? Nobody will be willing to buy property. You will shut down the market because nobody will be willing to buy property when they have a possibility that if this person has loans outstanding, that the creditors can come after them and always seize the property. How can one ever protect themselves from the possibility of seizure, right, if they don't know whether there's outstanding loans? Now, if they are aware of the loans and they're still willing to take the risk, that's their problem. But if they're not aware of the loans and they don't know what risk they're going to take, and there's almost no way to figure it out, why? Person who borrows money doesn't do it in a public manner, and therefore it's not milveh peh. There's nothing that's going to cause the loan to become well known, or for people to be aware of the fact that he's a debtor. He could owe thousands and thousands of shekel, and then he sells properties off, and then all those lukuchot are at risk. That are going to be taken away, and they have no idea. So people won't buy property. So Mishum Pseidel Luchot, the Chami came in and protected them by Milveh El Peh. So Gemara says, Yochei Milveh El Shtar Nami. So why don't we afford them the same protection by Milveh El Shtar? Hatam Inu Ninu Davsido Nafshayu. They caused themselves their loss. I mean, they were aware of the risk, and they took the risk with, full knowledge. Take risk with full knowledge, then you're right. You live with the risk that you took. You have to live with the outcomes of that risk. By a milveh al shtar, basically, we know that it's kala itlay. It becomes well known, and since it becomes well known, we don't worry about the fact that the luchot were unaware. So the fact that the Luchuchot are now aware makes them responsible for their actions and their risks. Meaning that we say it's fine. Within commercial transactions, we're comfortable with people taking risk as long as they're aware of the risk that they're taking. So if they understand risk, they know the risk, they have to assess for themselves what that risk is, and then they'll take that risk, and they'll live with the risk. What we don't want, and what we're protecting people from, is taking, unbeknownst to them, that they're taking risk. That they are buying something, unbeknownst to them, that is encumbered or has a lien on it already. So there, we'll come and protect the people so they don't take risks that they don't understand, or the opposite will happen, is that people will be unwilling to take risk anymore, and they won't buy anymore. So to protect the market, to allow people to buy, they created a system by which the kuchot are protected when it comes to unknown risk. So that's the way, this is at least the way Ula thinks of the puzzle over here. On the other hand, Rabba Amar, Dvar Torah, Echad Milveh Bishtar, Echad Milveh Alpeh, Inu Govel Nechasim B'nei Chorin. The Mina Torah, it's the other way around. Mina Torah, there is no such thing as a lien. Mina Torah, whether it's in a shtar, whether it's Milveh Alpeh, you have no rights to go after the kuchot. My time, why not? Shibud olav deoraito. There's no shibud min haTorah. There's no such thing as a shibud. A lien is a invention of the Chachamim, right? And again, we'll see why. But again, for commercial reasons, they created the lien. Uma tam amru milve b'shtar govem nechasim mishubadim. So then, why do they allow it to happen by nechasim mishubadim? Kedei shlotin ol delit bifnei lavin. Because they want to keep the loan market liquid. People are going to be unwilling to lend money if they can't get the money back. I mean, if they think that the money's at risk and they're not going to get paid back, why? Again, in their time, it's very clear that land is the only thing that doesn't move. It's the only thing that really is sumech datay olem, that they rely on to get repayment of their money. So if we say, no, you can only get his cash back, his cash could disappear. He could walk off. He could send it to another country. You know, there's no way to get to his cash. If he has land there, we know that they have something to go after. They have some protection. So the malveh creditors will be willing to lend money when they know that there's an insurance package that they'll get their money back. But if they're going to be, every time they lend money, it's like throwing it to the wind, they're not going to lend money anymore. And you're basically going to close down the market because lenders are going to be unwilling to take such risk of no repayment. Because if they have to go after the cash or try to dig people's cash out, they're just not going to lend. And again, we've discussed this before. We discussed it in Gittin, we discussed it in Ketubot a little bit, that in their day, there's no adjustment for risk. Because there's no interest. You're not getting paid interest for lending the money out. So there's no way to adjust for the fact that the person won't repay you. When you lend the money, the only thing you get back is the principal. So now, if you say, okay, so what? He's taking his risk. He'll lend the money out, then he'll get the principal back. Problem is that he's not getting compensated for that risk because he's not collecting interest on it. You know, today, in a modern day, or when you use a heter iska, if you can charge interest for the loan, then you can adjust it for the risk that you're taking. If you're afraid you're not going to get repaid, the interest rate will be much higher. Right? You think you're going to get repaid, the interest rate will be lower. So you can adjust for that risk. Without a mechanism for adjusting for risk, you have to protect the creditors.
At least you can be able to
get their principal back. And if they're not going to do that, they're not going to lend money at all. So that's what it's a commercial idea that you have a lien. So what about milveh alpeh? Why mortgages will be lower rate of interest because there's an embedded collateral. There's a collateral that has a lot of, for number one, it doesn't move, the collateral. And number two is there's an incentive for the individuals in the house not to give up the house. Right? I mean, that they don't want to have to be thrown out of their house, so they have an incentive to pay. So yeah, there is, the mortgage rates will always generally be lower than a unencumbered or a rate that does not include a collateral with it. So the Gemara says, Iochi, if that's the case, milve alpeh nami. So what about a milve alpeh? So the Gemara says, hatam leit leikala. Over there, the problem is there's no kol. So we can't put liens onto properties, meaning that yes, we want to protect the creditors. But we can't protect the creditors at the expense of the kuchot. So meaning if the kuchot are aware of it, then we say, hey, inu afsidam nafshayu. They took their risks, they understood the risks. But if they don't know about it, and here all we're doing is trying to protect creditors, we're not going to protect the creditors at the risk of hurting the lukuchot. So now the Gemara says, alright. Mi amar rabba hachi. Did rabba ever say such a thing that shibuda lav doraisa? Vama rabba, govu karka, yeshlo, govu ma'ot, enlo. If they collect from karka, he has. If they get it from the monies, they don't. This goes back to a sugyo in Yesh Nochlin. It was a machlokes between Rabbi Rav Nachman over there in Yesh Nochlin. But a bechor notel pishnayim. Does a Bechor get double payment when it comes to the outstanding loans of his father? The father was a creditor, and now the loan is being repaid. Does the Bechor have a double portion in that repayment of the loan? So there the Rabbo and Rav Nachman argued about, depends on the type of repayment. Rabbi says, if he pays back with, if they collect the loan with karka, land, then he does get a double portion. Why? Because when the loan was extended, there was a lien on that land. So when he repays it, when he gets the land back, then basically it's already existent. It was already in the estate. It belonged to the estate already from back at the time the loan was extended. And therefore the Bechor gets pishtayim because it's not roi, it's rather it's muchzak. On the other hand, if gavu ma'ot, if they get repaid in cash, we know the principle by loans is that ma'ot lo tzanidna. When you lend money out to someone, you don't expect to get back that exact coin or that exact money. You expect the money to be gone. You get repaid, that's new money that's coming back. That new money is ra'oi. That wasn't there really when the loan existed. And therefore, the Bechor will not get the menotel pishtayim because this is ra'oi velo muchzak. But what do you see from this? The Rabbi says that the karka was already a part of the loan. And he says, Bechor notel pishtayim. Bechor notel pishtayim is a principle midoraisa. And here we're saying what? That he gets a double portion. So, v'chitayimah. So what do you want to suggest? Now here there's a girsa issue. The argumar seems to read, v'chitayimah ipuch, the rabbi ulo ulo rabbi. There seems to be missing the Rashbam. If you see Zariah, the Rashbam has another girsa that is brought down, and the goes of Bach also, he helps to explain the girsa, which is, there's Rav Nachman's opinion, right? Which the Gemara now quotes, not just the Rabbo, but Rav Nachman Amar, Gabu Ma'ot Yeshlo, right? And Gabu Karka Einlo, that he has the opposite position of Rabbo. Then the Gemara says, Ipuch, the Rabbo, the Rav Nachman, Udrach Machman, the Rabbo. I mean, let's flip their positions. Rabbo and Rav Nachman's positions earlier in Yeshlochim will flip their positions to solve the problem. So the Gemara says, that will say that he thinks Ma'ot is the Bechor will get Pishnayim, but Karka won't get Pishnayim. So he says, no, you can't say that. Well, you can't say that. Baha shmaitata lo az lo hachi. Right? So the Gemara then says you can't say that because the whole sugya there doesn't fit in that way. I mean that Rabbi and Rav Nachman's positions cannot be flipped in the sugya over there. I buy you the Rabbah. He says Abai speaks to Rabbah and says lididach kasha. For you, it's a question. How do you say this? So the fact that Abai then asks questions afterwards directly to Rabbah about his position shows that that is his position. Rabbi is a Talmud of Rabbah and he's asking Rabbah questions about his position. So it's clear you can't flip a Rabbah and Rav Nachman there in the Gemara Nation of Chnim. Then the Gemara says, V'chitema, then, okay, so now over here it's continuing where the way arguers has it. Ipuch, the Rabbah, the Ulu, the Ulu, the Rabbah. So forget it, don't flip in Nation of Chnim, flip over here. The Machlok Zin Ulu and Rabbah who says, Shibuta the Raisa, Shibuta Lab the Raisa, you can't, no, you can't do that. V'amaruba, Dvar Torah, Balchov, Dine Bizibarit. So therefore, Ula says that Dvar Torah, a Balchov collects out of Ziburit. Right, so there are three categories of land we know, or qualities of land. There's Idit, which is the best, Benonit is the regular, and Ziburit is the worst quality of land. The Chamim laid out in Gitin, that there are different, people get the rights to collect from different places. By Nizakin, or Benizakin, you get to collect from Idit. When it comes from Balchov, you collect from Benonit, the middle category, and Ktubat Tisha gets from Ziburit. But over here, Ula makes a statement, even though a Bachov is entitled to get Beinonit, that's not his din min haTorah. His din min haTorah is to collect from Ziborit, from the lowest quality property. Why did they elevate him and give him better quality, or to make a demand that he can get better quality property? Is a Shalotin Odel Bifnei Lavin. They didn't want to ruin it they wanted to keep the commercial market, the loan market liquid. So how do they do that? Because if every creditor went out and lent, he's going to get back the dregs when he has to go and collect from Karkup. They're going to stop lending. It's not worth it. And then he has to try to sell it afterwards to liquidate it afterwards. It's not going to work. So we say, no, give him Benonit. So it's easy for him to sell the Karka and he can get his money back. So that's the Zolotin Odel Bifnei Lavin. But here, Ula comes along and says, Bachov Dina Biziborit. So how does that teach you that Shibudu Doraisa? So that the Rashbam, Din Torah, but why? All right, so that's great. So that's what the Rashbam. The Rashbam says exactly what you're saying. It says Din Torah, and therefore, Dina Bizuriot. He says, if you look in the Rashbam, he says, "Benafkale beper kama de bumba kama meish asher atan noshev bo yotzi elecha et avot." The one that you are right, the creditor towards this individual, he will bring you out the avot. So ma darko shel adam lo tzi pachot shebekelim. Person, what does he bring out normally? He brings out the lowest quality item. Alma shibudu diziburu itzoraita. So what are you going to get paid? You're going to get paid in metaltalin. Over there, he's going to bring you out some collateral. He's going to bring you out the worst collateral that he has. He's not going to bring out his best. He's going to bring out your worst. And you see over there that he has a right to demand the collateral. He has a right to demand the collateral, and he brings out the worst. There you learn that ziborit. How do you know that collateral comes, or that your repayment comes in the ziborit? There is the pasuk says you get the worst. And that means that what? That he must have a shibudo. He has some sort of right of collection, a shibudo daraisa, and that shibudo daraisa is ziborit. That's what Rishmam's on
here. From the first Rishmam here in the Gemara,
right.
It's a little bit...
He's saying it's right, it's an extent. But the Rishmam's the shitato, I'm just going to say that now, the Rishmam's the shitato, that the source for shibudo daraisa is Meotzi Alecha Da'avot, and then he says, when Ula tells you that the avot is ziborit, that you learn from the same pasuk, then he connects the two and says, if it's the ziborit, then it's also shibudu doraisa. That's the Rishbam, the Shitato, he's consistent in that way. Problem with the Rishbam, this is Tosfos takes issue with the Rishbam over here, which is that, where do you know that from? How do you know from Ula over here that shibudu is doraisa? The Tosfos says there's a basic principle that the Torah can lay out for you what you have to repay with. What you have to repay with doesn't mean that shibudu doraisa. The Torah can lay out principles. All right, if you want to pay back, you can pay back money only. You can pay back karka of this quality. You can pay back subin. You can pay back whatever you want. You can hand them whatever you want. Now, when the Torah lays out for you the method of payment, meaning that the type of payment that you make, that doesn't necessarily mean that shibudu doraisa. That just tells you what you have to pay back with.
Well, so that's it. Well, I wasn't sure I mentioned it.
No, it says if you lend money out, then you are entitled as the borrower to pay back. Oh, so you would have thought I could only pay back in cash. The Torah comes along and says not cash is not the only method for paying back. I can pay back with cash, and I can also pay back here ziborit, karka ziborit. The Torah is entitling you to another form or method of payment for the repayment of the loan. That doesn't prove to me shibudu doraisa. That just says that I have other methods for repayment. So Tosfos says, I don't understand where, first of all, I don't understand where the Rashbam came from. That he does say. Says that the Rashbam doesn't make sense to him. And number two is, I don't know where you got shibudu doraisa from this statement. So he says, Tosfos says over here, the shibud that we're talking about here is the shibud of the lukuchot. That's what he says here. Says I read it to you. B'shibud lekuchot mayri shemeshubabdim af bo'rav dekav de'arayot behedya lav doraisa havi hay kinyan demi doraisa lo yuchol l'shabed b'chovo et nechasav min alukuchot. He can't encumber his property that he sold off. Af al pi sheyachol l'machran, right? So that even though he was able to sell them. So this is Tosfos says over here that the idea that shibuda is lav doraisa means. They're not shibud lav doraisa that the creditor does not have a lien on the property, but rather the debtor has the right to sell property, and he has no right to encumber that property to a creditor. Once he sold the property, he doesn't have a right to extend the lien onto property that he sold. Since the Torah, or since he has the ability to sell that property, when he sells it to the kuchot, he can't pass the lien, or he can't extend the lien onto their property. The kuchot buy it, there's no shibud over there. That's what Tosfos explains when it means shibuda lav doraisa. Shibuda lav doraisa means that the lukuchot, you can't extend the lien onto the lukuchot. Supposed to the Rashbam over here, we didn't read it before, but he says, what does it mean shibuda lav doraisa? It's the second Rashbam in the Gemara. It says, shibuda lav doraisa b'kra mashkano shlo b'shat avato. What about the pasuk? I just quoted you that it is midoraisa from that pasuk. So that's about a mashkon shlo b'shat avah. That's not going to be at the time of the loan, that's going to be later on. Tosfos says, what type of answer is that? It's a kal v'chomer. If he can demand a mashkon shelo b'shat alva, then certainly b'shat alva, right, then he has a shibud, he has a lien on it. So what type of answer is that? That's shibud alav doraisa. So Tosfos says, I don't understand the Rashbam's understanding of shibud alav doraisa. Therefore, I'm going to reinterpret shibud alav doraisa to mean that you don't have a right to extend the lien once you've sold the property. When you sold the property, it means you clear the lien off of the property. That wipes out the lien, because who are you to sell property and leave the lien on the property? So now, over here, how are we going to explain when Ula comes along and says, Dvar Torah, Baal Chov, Dine B'Ziborit? What does it mean that his din is to collect from Ziborit? So that is here. This is what Ula's statement means. That is, maybe Ula is going on the Memra in Perek HaNizakin, in Gitin, the Ein Nifraim in Nichasim Shuvedim, B'Makom Sheish B'nei Chorin. You're not allowed to take encumbered property, where there's a lien, when there's free and clear property. V'afilu hein ziborit, even if they're the worst quality. D'mishum seder l'kuchot ugma adoraisa. Because of the loss of the kuchot, we make it midoraisa, we say, put it back to doraisa, and he asks that he can collect from the shibud of ziborit. He says, miolo ashkan to kama yihu behed yohachi. We never see him explicitly say this. So Tosfos says, we don't know where Ula said it. The only way I can try to manage Ula to be that it's a shibud of doraisa is explaining Ula being in the, said in the context of another statement in Gittin, which is what? That a creditor has the right only to, has to go to free and clear property before he goes to property with a lien. Even though that means that what? He's going to be downgraded. If he went after the uncovered property, the liens, then he would get benonit. If he takes from the free and clear property, he only gets ziborit, and he's entitled to benonit. Say no, we downgrade him back to his status midoraisa, that he gets ziborit, and he can only collect from ziborit. So what do you see from that? You see from that that there is a shibud, there's a lien there. And we're saying, despite the lien, he has to take ziborit from the free and clear. So that means, the fact that Ula is saying, despite the lien, means that there is such a thing called the concept, called the lien, that's affecting the kuchot. That's all, that's what Tosfos tries to suggest. In the end, that's how we know from this. He says, but even there, it's, he says, it doesn't explicitly say it. It doesn't explicitly say that's what he's addressing, but he says that's what we have to assume is the reason that it's a shibud adoraisa. Right, so now, what are you going to do with Rabba over now? Rabba's a problem. Rabba over here says shibuda lab doraisa. And Rabba back in Yishno Chleim seems to indicate that shibuda is doraisa because the Bechor gets pishnaim there. But it says, no, that's a problem. Rabba taima de b'nei marovo kamar, velelo svirle. Rabba is explaining the position of the name marovo, the b'nei Eretz Yisrael, that they say over there that noto pishnaim b'milve b'mekarki amor v'lo b'malot. He's just modifying what the b'nei marovo. The b'nei marovo says that a Bechor gets pishnaim b'milve. He comes along and says, that's only true by karka, not true by ma'ot. But he's not saying that's my opinion. I'm just telling you that what the B'nai Yisrael believe that, that's their opinion. My opinion is, shibud olav doraisa, and he will get nothing. Doesn't matter karka, doesn't matter ma'ot. Neither of those cases will he get any form of payment. Alright, now, we saw this before, this was quoted before. Rav Ushmal de Amrei Tarvayu, they both said, milveh alpe inu geveh lo mina yoshim velo mina lukuchot. A milva peh, an oral loan, you cannot collect neither from the inheritors of the, right, the debtor's inheritors, and you can't go get it from the encumbered property, from the kuchot, from buyers. My time, oh, what's the reason? Shibuda, lav doraisa. Shibuda is lav doraisa, therefore, milva peh is precluded from collecting from either of these parties. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, we also quoted before, Damrei Tarvayu, milva peh goveh ben min yoshim, uben min kuchot. A milva peh, an oral loan, can collect from yoshim and from the kuchot. Why? My tama shibuda deoraisa. Shibuda is midoraisa. So here you have what would be the core, right? We had before Ula and Rabba explaining whether shibuda is deoraisa or lav doraisa, yet they still had the kuchot were affected differently, whether it was bal peh or whether it was the shtar. Over here, if you go back to the basic halacha without any interventions of the chachamim, that if you believe shibud oraisa, then milva peh would be collect from the kuchot, from yoshim, would collect from everybody. If you believe shibud lad oraisa, then they would collect from neither, not the kuchot and not yoshim. That's what we have here. So, meitiv, you question this, or question this position. Chofer bor b'shut rabim. Someone digs a pit in the middle of the b'shut rabim. V'nafal olav shor. A shor comes along there, v'harago, and kills him. Patur. Then he's patur. Vlod, Elohim,
what's the case?
He dug a pit in the Rishut HaRabim.
And as he was digging,
and he's inside the boar. And then a shore comes by and falls into the boar. Baharago. And he killed him in the boar. Patur. And there he's patur from paying for him. Vlod, and not only that, Elohim, Meta Shur. The shore dies. Yoshe Balabor, Chayavim Lishalem, Demei Ashur. So not only are you patur for killing, right, the shore is, Bala Shore is patur for killing the individual is there, but if the shore dies, the individual dug the boar is now chayav. He made a boar b'shut HaRabim, he's chayav for the shalem, demei ashur, the balav. The yoshim are now chayav for that obligation to pay the demei ashur, the balav. So, Amar Rabbi Lo, Amar Rav. So over there, what do you see? You see that shibuda is the oraisa. Because here, the individual became chayav in the nizakim while he was still alive. Right, when he was in the boar, he became chayav for creating this nezek. And then there's a shibud based on that. When the shore goes in and dies, there's a shibud, and therefore the yoshim have to pay it up. So now what do you see from this? You see that it's a shibud, looks like a shibud deraisa. It looks like there's a, right, milva al peh, you govei mina yoshim. You should be able to go be a shulman. It's a bad problem for Rav and Shmuel here. Sounds like Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, that here you have a milveh peh, the Torah, right, is telling you that you're chayav in this case, which is the equivalent of a milveh peh. So milveh peh, then we say that the Yorshim have to fork out the money. So we say, no. Amar Yilo Amarav b'shamad b'din. He already came to Beis Din. So Beis Din was mechayev him. If Beis Din is mechayev him, Maisim Beis Din is like milveh b'shtar. Right, so it's like, that is a milveh b'shtar. Milveh b'shtar already, then you're talking about a different category. Milveh b'shtar, we agree there's a lien on a milveh b'shtar. Rav and Shmuel, we're talking about a milveh al peh. So Gemara says, Bahara Goktani. Where's the court case? He killed him. The shor killed him in the boar. When did he ever get to court? How did he get to court? No. He didn't kill him literally in the sense that he died on the spot. He made him to a treifa, which means he's going to die within the next 12 months. We got him to Beis Din. He was in Beis Din before he passed away. That he died and they buried him right in the boar. They buried him in his boar that he dug. He dug his own grave. I mean, he didn't go to Beis Din. So, Hatam, the Yatvei Dani Apuma de Beiro. The Dayanim were sitting right on the boar. They were courts and chess session right around the boar of Echayivua. And therefore, they were obligated him right there in the boar. He died and they buried him right on the spot. Alright, I'm saying the case is far-fetched, but making the basic point, which is that over here, in this situation, you can create a shibud, even if you believe that milveh al-peh is not shibud d'oraisa, nevertheless, in this case, we can explain it as being a shibud d'oraisa, or being there lean there, because of the fact that it's a massive beis din. The massive beis din converts into a shtar. Now the question, again, this Tosos raises a question a number of times over here, which is, what about, there's a difference between yorshim and the kuchot. There should be a difference in all these cases between yorshim and the kuchot. The basic question that he asks is that, say milveh b'shtar. If you say milveh b'shtar, what is the reason that milveh b'shtar, we say that the kuchot afsid of nafshayu? The kuchot afsid of nafshayu is because they knew about it. There was a kala itle. There's a call out there. If there's a call out there, we say, take care of yourselves. You took the risk. You're up the creek yourself. We're not going to help you. So now, when it comes to the Yoshim, can you make the same claim? Oh, there's a Kala Yitlo, so the Yoshim are, right, therefore the Yoshim are, right, the Chayav to pay. Why is it relevant to them? Why is it relevant to the Yoshim that there's a Kala Yitlo, go Kala Yitlo? It doesn't matter, they're Yoresh, they have no choice in how the Yerusha comes, they have no choice about the Kala Yitlo. So why should it matter at all for Gabalu Kuchot? So now, that's one. Number two is, now when we said Maaseh Beis Din, Maaseh Beis Din is milveh b'shtar. Why? Because Maaseh Beis Din is the same thing as a shtar. It does the same thing. A Maaseh Beis Din has a kala yidle. So Maaseh Beis Din has a kala yidle. So again, that helps you by the lukuchot. Why does that help you by the yorshim to go collect from yorshim? Why does that change anything about the yorshim? So Tosfos lays out a principle over here. He says it twice in these two Tosfotim, the second to last and the third to last the Tosfot. If you look at the one that says Eino Goveh, lo mina yorshim. Tosfos asks a question. Tema. Kevin de milveh b'shtar goveh mina yorshim, af agav de shibud olav d'oraisa shlo b'shtar nami. My time and the lo gavi. It comes to the fact that a yorshim, according to this, right, would collect from the yorshim, because Eino Goveh by milveh b'peh. But by milveh b'shtar, they would agree. So then why by a shlo b'shtar, why don't they collect also? Why by milveh b'peh can they not collect by the yorshim? Mali hechadit le'kala, mali hechadit le'kala. Why does it make a difference by the yorshim? Yes, the kol, ein kol. Again, their status does not change because of kol or not because of kol. Their status remains the same. So if the whole point by milveh b'shtar is that what? That they... the kuchot are on their own then because they are aware of the risks. So that's what, by milveh peh, they're not aware of the risks, so we can't obligate them. But what about a yorshin? Yorshin, whether there's a call, whether there's no call, they should be obligating the loan because the call makes no difference to them. They're going to inherit the property whether there's a risk or no risk. I mean, they get the property from their father. Yishlomar, mi shemalveh be'edim, eino chushesh lekala. Anybody who lends with edim, it doesn't do with a shtar. Ulegavia de lukuchot, lo tiknu chachamim, ulegavia de lukuchot, period. Lo tiknu chachamim, lagvot mena yoshim. A person who lends with edim and not with a shtar, he's basically making a statement. He says, I'm not going to go after lukuchot. Because he knows, by doing it in a milveh al edim, milveh al peh, and not milveh b'shtar, he's making a basic statement. This loan, I'm not going to be able to go after lukuchot. Because we're going to protect the lukuchot. Right, the Chachamim. So therefore, if the Luchot are protected, we're going to say the same thing by the Yorshim. That the Yorshim are going to be put on the same level as the Luchot. If you made a loan with the sense or with an understanding that you're not going after the Luchot, that means you also had a sense that you're not going after the Yorshim. Even though, again, for not for the same reason. By the Luchot, there's a reason because Mishum Kala. But we're not going to let you go after them because we don't because of Kol. Because there's a lack of a Kol. But nevertheless, by Yorshim, even though the Kol makes no difference, the type of loan that you made already indicates that you have no assumption of collection from the Kuchot, and that's true of Yorshim as well. And the same thing applies here by Amman Badin. Right, but the understanding, the shibud is generated by shibud aguf on the individual that you lend to, and your assumption is that that individual is going to repay you. The money leaves his possession, then your assumption is that you're not getting paid back. Same with like l'kuchot. L'kuchot is just that the karka left in their possession. Now, that's even when they have achrayut. L'kuchot could have achrayut. The debtor could have to pay them back. They will lose no money. Right, if their extensions are the Luchot. And it might be an obligation. I'm not saying that the Luchot don't have the Yorshim don't have an obligation to pay it back. It's just that they're not, there's no Chiyuv. We can't take it away from them. It might be that there's a mitzvah for them to repay based on what you're suggesting. But there's no, right, there's no obligation. We can't force them to repay in that case. And that also says the next Tosfos, V'chein amad b'din d'besamuch mushum kala gova mina Yorshim. Because there's a call, he's allowed to go after Yorshim. Umina Luchot. So that they shouldn't, the door of Lavim will not be closed. So that, the fact that Amad Badin has a call also affects Yorshim, even though it should make no difference to the Yorshim. So that's what Tosfos has a principle he's laying out here is that Lukuchot equal Yorshim. And anything we're gonna, right, anything that's applicable to a Lokeach will be applicable to Yorshim, even though from a logical standpoint it's not true, even though it doesn't make so much sense. But nevertheless, we're gonna apply and we're gonna treat them equally. So that's just Tosfos lays out here. Now, Amar Rav Papa. Rav Papa comes along and brings the conclusion over here. Hilchasa, the loch is, mil valpe, gove mina yoshim. Number one, an oral loan, you can go after the yoshim. Ve'ena, gove mina lukuchot. But you're not allowed to, right, we're not allowed to go after the lukuchot. Gove mina yoshim, kadesh lo tino deli bifnei lavin. He's gove mina yoshim because, what, we don't want to be tino deli bifnei lavin. We want to keep the market liquid. We want people to get their money back. Like what you were suggesting just now, Shaul. That his expectation is to get his money back. Just because you were, you're your father's property, I still don't expect my money back. Right. Ve'eno. Gove min al-kuchot ulei le'kala. There, by the kuchot, they can't take preventative measures. They can't assess the risk. They can't protect themselves over here. And therefore, the halacha is that you can't go after the kuchot. Now, the Yerushbam says, that your gove min yorshim, I reference you back to yesterday's daf, where I explained to you that that's not always true. When we say that he's gove min yorshim, that's only in a case where we can prove the lo tasvei tzorot. Now, it's not clear that he had token money or he had cash. So the only two times, according to the Rishbam, that this will take place is when he was Shamtei, he died in Bishamtei, he died in his Nidoi, or he explicitly is Chayav Modeh. He explicitly says that, right, that I owe the money still. Because if not, we suspect the fact that he already repaid him, or that he left money with him, and therefore they can't come to the Yoshim to make a claim, like, we're not going to pay you money, you've got to prove to us that you didn't get money, which he obviously can't do. Can't prove that he didn't get cash, unless the circumstances dictated, which is either that he was in Nidoi, the debtor, or he said, I did owe him money. And he explicitly says, I owe him money. So this is not like a blanket statement. It's only in circumstances where we don't have the excuse. Right. That's over here too. It's saying, Milbal Peh. The Rashbam qualified it back on Kufayin Dalet. He said, he quoted this Gemara. It says, how do I reconcile between these two statements? I reconcile between the fact that, between Rav Papa, that says over here, that according to Rav Huna Barib Dershul, we paskin like, and then where we paskin that, Milbal Peh does go Vemin Yershim. So if we paskin like both of those, the reconciliation is that the only time Milbal Peh would go Vemin Yershim are in those circumstances where we don't have to worry about Tafsei Tzororot, which is Shamte and Chayav Modeh. So those are the two cases where it will be true. And Tosfos over here says, Hachi, which is an interesting case, that Tosfos over here mentions that this is according to Halacha here, right, is Hilchas Amil Val Peh. Who are we passing like? Are we passing like Shibuda Doraisa? Or are we passing like Shibuda Lav Doraisa? Because what ended up happening here is that we took a piece of each of them, right? We're doing, if Shibuda is Doraisa, right? Then Milbal Peh, you should be able to get it. And that's why you can go after the Yorshim here. Ah, why not the Lukuchot? The Chachamim protected them. Right? Or you could say, no, Shibuda is Lav De'oraisa. Shibuda is Lav De'oraisa, that's where you can't go after the Lukuchot. Right? But why can you go after the Yorshim? Because it's Lo Til No Delad Bifnei Lavin, right? That we don't want to close them out. We don't want to... So you could explain it according to both sides. I mean, that it's not clear. We're not passing over here. It says, over here, the Gemara can be explained according to either one of them, because either position here, the Lukuchot or the Yorshim could be explained. Each one of them could be explained as the Ikar Halacha, and the other one as the Takana. So the fact is that you could explain either according to Deoraisa or according to Lav Deoraisa. That we don't have any conclusion about Shibud Deoraisa or not from the Psak of Rav Papa over here. Okay, we'll stop over here.